Another art form is under scrutiny from another group of arbiters of taste. In Britain, the Queen's English Society says it's fed up with modern poetry. These guardians of the English language say it's not a poem if it doesn't have rhyme or meter. That's open to debate, which leads us to ask, what is a poem? The world's Alex Galifant has the answer, or rather, the answers.
Sometimes a poem is An Ode to Love by Pablo Neruda, or some nonsense verse by Lewis Carroll. It could be a sonnet from Shakespeare or a howl from Ginsberg. It can be all these things and more. So sure, we could talk about the rules of poetry, whatever they might be, but instead let's consider the function of poetry. Remember Terry Waite? He was one of the hostages held in Beirut. Well after his release, Waite wrote a poem.
Yesterday is with you now, the same train, the same grandmother, the same forefathers. Now you may cry the bitter tears of anguish. Now you may howl with the primitive howl of a lost soul. Now you may embrace forever.
Now, you may like Terry Waite's poetry. You may not. But it's a good guess that writing it had value for Mr. Waite. Poetry can also hold value for communities. The British poet Simon Armitage wrote this poem 3 months after September 11th.
Here is an architecture of air. Where dust has cleared, nothing stands but free sky, unlimited and sheer. Smoke's dark bruise has paled. There seems to be an urge to communicate through poetry, and poetry's always had some kind of responsibility right down the ages, and, you know, every now and again, the moment seems right to put things down in words.
So poetry can be a kind of record, a detailed snapshot in language. And it doesn't have to come from full-time professional poets. Take, for example, Malaysian lawyer Cecil Rajender. When he's not practicing law, he's practicing his poetry, and he enjoys it.
The language of law is very ossified and stilted language, whereas poetry, the language is more creative, it's more dynamic.
Here's part of Rajender's poem, Apologies to the Trees.
If only politicians were trees, think how our budgets and diets would be balanced. Their fruit, flower, roots and leaves could give such rich sustenance. And what a bonus it would be if we, their constituents, could hack them down each time they became a nuisance. If only politicians were trees.
In all fairness, some politicians appreciate the usefulness of a bit of poetry. In 1988, President Reagan upped the diplomatic stakes by quoting Russian writer Boris Pasternak at a dinner for Mikhail Gorbachev. The quote came from the poem The Garden of Gethsemane, but the subtext was disarmament.
Peter repulsed the ruffians with his sword and cut off the ear of one of them. But he heard, "You cannot decide a dispute with weapons. Put your sword in its place, O man."
Years later, Polish poet Wisława Szymborska won the Nobel Prize for Literature. The country's finance minister at the time recited one of Szymborska's poems for the news media. It was about debt. The poem struck a chord with Poles in the 1990s. It might strike a chord with Americans today.
Nic darowane, wszystko pożyczone. Tonę w długach po uszy.
Nothing for granted, everything lent. I'm in debt up to my ears. I'll be forced to pay for myself, with myself. Give a life for a life. That's the way it's been organized. Mortgaged heart, mortgaged liver, and mortgaged every single finger.
Other political poetry is out-and-out propaganda. The president of Turkmenistan writes poems to reinforce his self-image as not merely the country's top politician, but its savior.
I am the Turkmen spirit, and I was reborn to bring you a golden age and happiness. I came here as an envoy of prosperity and the music of the melody of life.
Of course you did. But all poets, Turkmen or not, should listen to some wisdom from the late Mexican poet Octavio Paz.
Poets are known both for their words and their silences. From the beginning, the poet knows that silence is inseparable from the word.
Good advice for poets and politicians. For The World, I'm Alex Galifant.